Welcome to another episode of Good Value by Antipodes.
There appears to be a shift underway in global markets. Expectations around rate cuts have been meaningfully adjusted, which catalysed a repricing of bonds. And while we're still at multi-decade high levels of market concentration, we have started to see a broadening in performance. Parts of the mega-cap tech complex are still performing, but we have seen a rotation into real assets like gold and copper. So as the market starts to tilt towards the higher-for-longer interest rate scenario, something that we at Antipodes have been projecting for some time, what does this mean for portfolio construction? Is it time to retreat from tech stocks and rethink commodities? Joining me today to share Antipodes' views and positioning in these two critical parts of the market is portfolio manager Graham Hay. Graham, it's always a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Thanks, Alison. Great to be on the podcast.
At the beginning of the year, the market was very much in the soft landing camp, you know, with expectations around inflation falling, then allowing the Fed to undertake dovish rate cuts. But that's starting to change. The US economy has been incredibly resilient. It's been pretty insensitive to the aggressive rate hiking cycle. The consumer has been propelled by excess savings. And we're also on the cusp of an AI and climate-driven investment boom. So to start with, can the US economy keep powering ahead?
Well, that's a great topic to start on. You're right. The US has proved to be much more resilient in the face of what has been one of the steepest hiking cycles of the last 50 years. And you know, with that, we've had the impact of inflation, which has remained stubbornly high, as you mentioned. Yet, despite that, US growth from the beginning of this year has actually started to reaccelerate, which sort of confounds a lot of the the prior analysis, and that's made the Fed's job much more difficult. So, you know, there are obviously a number of factors driving that. There are numerous stimulus programs that are feeding through into a, you know, what is a fundamentally tight market for various parts of the economy. Yeah, we've had the announcement of the CHIPS Act. We've had the Inflation Reduction Act. We've had the spillover impact of the COVID stimulus spending for the consumer, which, you know, be reminded that that is 70% of GDP. And so there's a number of these forces have allowed the US economy to continue to be very resilient. We are seeing signs, however, that some of the impact of that higher for longer inflation, just the sustained impact of higher cost of living, is starting to drag on the consumer. And there's data out there that shows that the bulk of the surplus savings is now being drawn down. So it's not surprising that we're starting to see some of the figures demonstrate more weakness, and that has maybe given the Fed some room to think about easing this year, but they've been very adamant that they'll be data dependent, and if the data allows, they will move on rates. But they're also very firm about their 2% inflation commitment. Have been reiterating that in the press just this week. So inflation needs to keep edging down before the Fed are able to act. And at the same time, you've got these very strong fiscal programs that are, you know, sort of acting against that ambition, and that's making the job of the Fed all the more challenging. Look, where does that leave us? I should say, where, you know, inflation is clearly higher than the Fed would like. The higher rate regime, we think, has eventually an eroding effect on the consumer, and then various parts of the corporate landscape, which are susceptible to higher rates, you know, speaking of areas such as commercial property, for instance, private equity, private loans, are all parts of the system that are vulnerable to this rate regime that we're in today. So it remains a pretty complex environment, but there are still opportunities out there, both within the US and, you know, we think increasingly in other parts of the world.
And as I alluded to in the opening, we've seen some meaningful moves in both tech and commodities this year. So let's talk tech first, and then we'll go to commodities. So in the tech space, we have seen a divergence in the performance of mega cap tech. You know, Tesla and Apple are both down this year, and that's against an S&P that's up almost 10%. But NVIDIA has continued to defy gravity. And you know, it's had a phenomenal run because of its near monopoly over AI chips and its pricing power, you know, building and operating AI models as both power and hardware intensive. So a huge demand for NVIDIA's GPUs. And the market has blessed NVIDIA with the title of ultimate AI winner. But we know that with any nonlinear change, the landscape will shift over time. Now, Graham, you have a long history covering technology stocks over the course of your career. So what is your take?
The arrival of the commercial implementation, I guess you'd say, of these large language models, which have been fermenting for a number of years prior to this, but really the release of ChatGPT in November 2022 and then the subsequent cycle of investment that has gone on to follow that has been, you know, pretty unprecedented. Really, you have to go back to the late 90s to have witnessed something that's remotely close to what we're seeing. And, you know, you mentioned NVIDIA. NVIDIA has been the prime beneficiary of that spending cycle. And the stock has done exceptionally well over the last year. But it's worth noting that NVIDIA's share price performance has been, you know, completely underwritten by both revenue and profit growth over that period. So that whilst the stock has had a very good run, the notional valuation today on current earnings is actually not as extreme as you might think. Now, the question is, you know, how sustainable is this level of spending if we are in fact in an arms race to build more capacity, train ever more sophisticated models? I think that there are still some questions to be answered about the sustainability of spending, given that we really yet to properly put any sort of commercial revenues around these models that are being trained. But really, the way we're thinking about it is that the capability of these large language models is transformational, and it will no doubt find its way into the way companies operate and the way consumers interact with the digital and physical world. And one of the areas we're contemplating is how these models will move the way from these large data centers, which has just been where the majority of the spending has been happening, out into the real world or the edge, as we call them, to the device level. So, you know, we're starting to think about other ways that we can get exposure to this transformation. There are some interesting stocks out there that have very strong positions today that we don't think are priced for, you know, either a replacement cycle of demand or growth in content that could come with some of these new AI use cases.
And do you think, you know, I want to get to talk about some of these ideas that you know, you're clearly working on. But before we get to that, do you think, you know, competition could be building against NVIDIA in terms of the lock that it currently has over these chips? How do you see that playing out?
Yeah, that's the other dynamic here that is very unique to this environment. You know, if you go back over the last, you know, 25 years, we had an era of complete specialization whereby all of the big systems companies of the first era of technology, the mainframe companies and systems companies, gradually gave way to specialized providers of both software and hardware. So we had a disaggregation of the technology stack as we knew it in the sort of 70s and 80s, and that gave way to specialty companies. Today, you know, we're seeing the opposite happening. And probably the best example of that has been Apple over the last decade, who have insourced more and more of their requirements of their devices. They displaced Intel chips with their own internally designed chips for their Mac line. And we're also seeing the cloud companies who have, you know, unprecedented levels of scale also begin to internalize a lot of the key technology that they use to run their applications and workloads on. Amazon were really the first to start doing that on the networking side. But we've seen a much more aggressive push into silicon by the cloud companies over the last 2 or 3 years. One of the data points that we track are job openings across the cloud companies, and it's been very evident that the demand for silicon engineers has been growing very rapidly for the last 5 years amongst the hyperscale cloud companies. So it's no surprise that we're hearing more and more about alternatives to merchant silicon, such as that provided by NVIDIA. Ultimately, these cloud companies will want to optimize the cost of running these workloads, and that may involve displacing, you know, third-party products where they can. So I think that's something we'll continue to evolve. Right now, NVIDIA have a strong lead, and they have a lot of momentum behind them, but clearly the landscape could and is likely to shift over the next 1 to 2 years.
There's no doubt that AI and the cloud are tomorrow's megatrends. So where are you finding opportunities to take exposure to this investment cycle where valuations make sense?
That's a good question. It's the one we ask ourselves all the time, of course, as an investor. You know, I think when we last spoke, Alison, on a podcast, I talked about TSMC. You know, a lot of what we're talking about here starts with TSMC. They are, you know, they are the largest and most sophisticated foundry company in the world. All of the chips that you use inside your device, a lot of the chips you use inside your computers these days are manufactured at TSMC. And the company have proven over, you know, several decades now that they have a very strong position in that industry. And I think the recent data point around Intel's attempts to build a foundry from scratch and how difficult that's proving to be, just a further evidence of the strength of TSMC's position, particularly at the leading edge of manufacturing. So look, at 18 times earnings, with the demand cycle ahead of them that we see, I think that's still a very reasonable proposition as a stock and something we own in our funds. But looking beyond that, those sort of, let's say, first order beneficiaries of AI, we're now starting to think about, as I mentioned earlier, edge applications. So how will AI proliferate at the edge, right? When will it become consumerized? And there's several drivers of that. The cost of running AI workloads in the cloud in centralized data centers. We know from the capital spending that's coming through at the cloud companies, we know that that's expensive. There's ultimately a desire to offload some of those compute requirements to edge devices. You know, for example, Microsoft's Copilot is something that could benefit enormously from more localized compute in the PC or laptop on which you're using that service. So, you know, we're thinking about who and how companies may benefit from that. You know, recently we've gone back to a prior holding of the firms, a company called Qualcomm. Qualcomm, as some of you may know, is the leader in providing both the intellectual property as well as the chips that are used to power most handsets, including Apple, and we see a roadmap that Qualcomm have to add more compute capabilities into a next generation device that will enable the use of large language models on the device itself, and so that could both grow the content available for Qualcomm, but it could also catalyze an upgrade cycle in the handset industry, which is these days is sort of very mature. So there's a couple of opportunities for Qualcomm, we think, for a stock that, again, is pretty modestly priced relative to the market and relative to its own, you know, sort of status in the industry. So that's a couple of ideas that we think are still worth pursuing.
So TSMC and Qualcomm, and, you know, along with Oracle, another portfolio holding that we featured on this podcast before, are good examples of pragmatic value exposure to AI and the cloud. Now let's turn to commodities. The sector has been getting a lot of attention recently, and not all commodities have had a strong quarter. Oil has been notably flat, despite tensions in the Middle East. And the real action has been in gold, which is up around 10% this year, and metals like copper, nickel, aluminium and zinc, which are all up around 15%. So what's driving these price moves and are they sustainable?
Yeah, that's a good question. And sort of in some ways, it's a little bit tied to the previous discussion in relation to technology. A lot of the pull through of commodities is increasingly being catalyzed by investments in data centers and energy transition more generally. But what I think we're really seeing is the beginning of the other side of the COVID cycle. COVID created a number of distortions across the global system and left us with a bit of a hangover as consumers destocked after a reopening occurred across the globe. That destocking process led to a number of commodities going through a difficult time over the last 18 months. And coupled with that, you had inflation eating into the profit and loss statements of a lot of the commodity companies. So that created a pretty challenging backdrop. Not to mention the weakness in the Chinese economy, which is the world's largest consumer of these commodities. We now seem to be emerging from the other side of that, whereby some of the structural drivers, the demand drivers, that is, are now starting to reassert themselves. And that has been married with what remains a period of underinvestment across these key commodities. And that's really the basis for our sort of positive or constructive view. Now, I think you still need to be selective, but when we look at the performance of copper, for example, this year, particularly since February, the commodity has rallied quite a lot. Up about 15% from its lows. It's very clear to us that the level of investment required to meet the demand that's projected by 2030 is still well below what has been scheduled by the miners. So we see the potential for a continued very tight market in commodities like copper. And it's really driven by that combination of structural demand drivers and underinvestment in the assets themselves. So that remains pretty interesting to us. We have some direct exposure there that we've had for a few years now. Gold is a somewhat unique story. Gold, we talk about it in US dollars, but gold in other currencies has been hitting new highs for a number of years now. It finally broke through to US new highs in US dollars earlier this year. And what's interesting is it's come at a time when we've had real rates increasing. And normally those two things are inversely correlated. In other words, gold prices would suffer in a rising real rate environment. But what we're observing is the combination of particular central bank buying. We are seeing retail interest, particularly out of China, in gold, and then more recently we've seen ETF interest in the commodity that are driving prices to the highs that we've seen. So we think fundamentals for gold are still very well supported. The interesting question, though, is how to play that, and the miners have dramatically underperformed the gold price over the last 5 years. There's lots of reasons for that. But at the end of the day, the gold mining industry, has to do a better job of generating sustainable levels of free cash flow, generating positive returns on invested capital, and understanding that there's more to being a gold company than just watching the gold price move higher. So we have existing positions there where we think that is happening. Agnico Gold would be a great example. And then a larger position in Barrick, which we think has just an underappreciated position, a reserve position in both in gold and copper. And we think we'll see signs through the balance of 24 that the company are actually starting to grow production. And with that, unit costs will come down and cash flows will come through.
Graham, we've owned tech resources in Canada for a number of years now. What's the update on the outlook for that company?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of activity in AppTech over the last 12 months. You know, our original thesis for taking the position in early 2021 was that it was tech was at the time one of the last remaining holdouts of restructuring, you know, following the sort of commodities bust in 2013, 2014, 2015. We saw an opportunity in a company that had high quality assets, but had a poor record of capital allocation and a management team which was not particularly favored by the market. That was sort of that combination in our minds represented multiple ways of winning. You know, fast forward to 2024, and a lot of those things have actually played out. We've had changes in management. We've had governance reform. The family have a super voting share, which they've announced that they will forego in the coming years. And the biggest of all was the announced sale of the coal business to Glencore, which will close in the third quarter of this year. And that will leave Teck Resources as a primarily copper and base metals pure play, listed in Canada, of course, but with assets across the globe. And, you know, when we look at the profile of the company and the profile of the commodities that they're exposed to over the next 5 years, it looks like a pretty interesting story still. So we've been taking advantage of weakness in the stock over the last 12 months as we've gone through the transaction announcement. There's been a lot of turnover of the shareholder base, but we think, you know, going into second half of this year with the sale of the coal business, the redeployment of those proceeds, some of which will come back to shareholders, and then just the outlook for the commodity itself, I think tech is still a pretty interesting way to get exposure to that.
So, Graham, pulling all of this together, investors need to look for opportunities beyond mega caps where some of the earnings streams aren't attractively priced. And, you know, you've highlighted we're finding AI beneficiaries on mid to high teens multiples. And in commodities, it's about cutting through the noise and speculation and taking exposure to areas where supply and demand dynamics look attractive. But what are your key takeaways for each sector?
I think if you look at what's happening through the lens of an arms race, there are parallels to 2000. You know, we had a fiber optic communications boom in the late 90s. A lot of that capacity was overbuilt. It was game changing technology in that it enabled all of the things we take for granted today, and the way we use the internet. But there was a period thereafter where, when investment receded and valuations came down, but there were second order beneficiaries of all of that investment. And so I think the time is now to start thinking about those second order beneficiaries and how AI as a technology will permeate its way through into our daily lives. And no doubt there'll be more ideas to come over the coming couple of years. But That's the way we're thinking about the current technology landscape. On the commodity side, I think it's, you know, for us, it's really joining the dots on the bigger cycle. And as I mentioned earlier, in areas where we've had, you know, fundamental levels of underinvestment against a fixed or improving demand backdrop, then I think those areas are pretty interesting. Now, that's precisely what catalyzed the oil cycle in 2021. Mm. We went through a period of heavy underinvestment and consolidation. Oil prices temporarily went negative in 2020, if you remember. A few short years later, we ended up in a very strong price cycle and the equities responded. Mm. So I think, you know, looking at the various parts of the commodity landscape through that lens is an interesting starting point. I mentioned copper, but you know, there are other interesting parts of the industry where we're favorably disposed to agricultural commodities here, and also looking at other interesting areas like aluminium which is probably the unheralded beneficiary of a lot of the energy transition that's happening. So both areas are ripe for opportunities, and we've certainly got our ideas lined up.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Graham. You've given us some great new ideas to think about in the tech space and some food for thought in commodities. So thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Alison.
The content in this podcast is general information only. It is not advice of any kind and doesn't take into account your personal financial situation, objectives, or needs. You should seek professional advice before making any financial decisions. Stock commentary is illustrative only and not a recommendation to buy, hold, or sell any security.